Hello, everybody, and welcome to Kentucky Ag Matters, a podcast designed to inform and educate both producers and consumers about all matters affecting agriculture. On this week's show, David, Jay, and Vicki will visit with Kevin Laurent, UK Extension Specialist with the Department of Animal and Food Science. Our weekly topic will be the West Kentucky Select Bred Heifer Sale, and this week's ag issue will be heifer selection tips for the cow herd. And as always, we'll wrap things up with this week's timely tip. Thanks so much for joining us. We hope you enjoy the show. Well, hello, everybody.
Hey, Jay. How are you?
Doing well, David. How's everything in your part of the world?
It's doing pretty good. I thought we was going to get to plant some corn, but probably by the time this airs, there will be some corn planted. But, you know, hopefully some folks have gotten some stuff done by now.
Saturday, there in North Christian where I live, I saw one planter go down the road, but I saw several sprayers. And saw a lot of spraying activity all around on Saturday, different
places. That was a good day to do it, too.
Despite the near hurricane winds, there were a lot of sprayers.
And I'm sure the spray booms was really low to the ground too, wasn't it?
Somewhere, I did see one.
It got on the ground somewhere, about as high as me. I don't know if it was under the spray or not, but it landed somewhere.
That's right. It landed somewhere.
Yeah. Well, it's the time of the year where people got to go, and everything's going to be late. And we do understand people trying to make the most of what they have, and it's kind of like cutting hay. You know, when you cut hay, when you have three dry days.
That's right.
And that's basically the situation all of our producers are in right now.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, when it dries up, it's going to get crazy in a hurry. And, you know, it's one of those years that, you know, when spring happens just exactly like we want it to, you know, everything just kind of moves along. And but then when we have springs like this, everything happens in, you know, 10 days. Yep.
I'd say by the time this airs that folks will have gotten a bunch done, because we can plant a lot of corn in a short amount of time for sure.
That's right.
And this is a show that won't be airing until a little bit later. We're putting it together a few weeks before it'll actually be on. And that's got a lot to do with our guest, Kevin Laurent, beef specialist with the UK Animal Science Department here at Princeton, is our guest today. And we're going to be talking a little bit later on about our bred heifer sale. And we want to be able to show this right before that's going to be aired and help plug that show a little bit. But, Kevin, welcome. Glad to have you with us this morning.
Glad to be here.
This is a new kind of format for us. We all have done meetings together with you in the past, but sitting down in a room and recording, it's kind of like the meeting that keeps on going, because once we air this, folks will be able to listen to it from here on out, and we try to preface certain things that may change along the lines, and that's why we give a date when we're doing this, because we may change some recommendations along the way.
Right, yeah. You know, that recorded thing, that can get a little scary, too. You gotta watch what you say sometimes, you know.
We have managed through the magic of editing to keep this a G-rated show.
Right. Well, I'm counting on you. I hear you're the IT man. So, Jay Stone is the IT man. That's a little scary.
I think somebody said I was it. I don't think that meant IT.
Yeah.
But we're glad to have you with us today. And David, Vicki, what are some of the thoughts you've got this morning for Kevin?
Well, you know, we kind of want to talk about the West Kentucky Select Bred Heifer Sale towards the end. But Kevin, we want to talk about what are some things that we need to be looking for? What are some things that we need to do when we're trying to, even if we're going to save heifers, or, you know, because we need to have some selection pressures there that, you know, we need to cull some that need culling. What are some things we need to look for as producers, you know, to saving bred heifers or trying to buy bred heifers?
Yeah, and it can be a complex issue, really. And a lot of times, I guess, producers, we don't, maybe in general, with a lot of things we do, we're busy and we don't give enough thought and planning to some of the things we do, because we're talking about trying to get the corn planted. You just got to get it done, you know, got to get things done. So, you know, a lot of times we just sort off what we think are good-looking heifers at home, and we feel, well, they'll make good cows and go for it, you know. But I really think we need to dig a little deeper. And honestly, it's a tough question. Do you keep your own replacements or do you buy? And that's not an exact easy question for any. Every producer has its strengths and weaknesses on their cow herd and their management and what they ought to do. So there's no blanket recommendation for that. You know, if you're going to keep your own heifers and I'm not gonna try to make this negative in terms of just trying to get people to come to a select bred heifer sale. But if you're gonna keep your own heifers, it's a challenge to do the things right. You need to make sure it starts with bull selection, and it's not, you know, what kind of bull did that heifer come from? You know, if we're buying terminal type bulls, real growthy terminal type bulls, keeping that feed, even if that calf is out of your best, what you consider your best cow, that may still not be the best genetics to put back in from a maternal standpoint.
Yeah, that's what I was fixing to say. Maternal standpoint, that may not be the best thing to do, you know.
Right. And, you know, I like to tell people, anytime we talk about bull selection, I think you start here also, whether it's heifer selection, bull selection. What's your goal, you know? And I know Dr. Right. Bullock loves to get people to try to make set goals and parameters mm-hmm. before they select bulls. You know, are you a terminal cross or your maternal cross? When you're buying a bull to make heifers with, I like to tell people, make sure, and it's hard to do, but hook up with a breeder that's got maternal line type genetics, and try to see if at all possible, and this is kind of hard to do, but try to see that bull's dam in production, or get some kind of feedback from a breeder that you trust. That bull's dam is one of the good cows, and one of the cows with a good udder and good feet and breed backs every year and is breeds early in their calving season. And that's a lot to ask whenever we, you know, we just go to a bull sale and pick a bull and say we're going to raise some heifers out of her. You know, those what I just said and doing that's a lot of, there's a lot of space totally between
two,
that.
Yeah, totally two different sides of the spectrum there.
Exactly.
Really.
And again, we get busy, we need a bull, we go buy a bull at a bull sale. And there's nothing against bull sales. Please don't take that the wrong way. But whenever you're buying maternal genetics, you've got to be careful, and you've got to get with a breeder that you can trust, that has maternal line type genetics. Mm-hmm. Get sires from there to get your heifers to raise heifers out of those kind of genetics.
You touched on something there, Kevin, that I think most all of us are guilty of not doing to begin with, and that's setting goals, having production goals for your herd, and then building a herd that will help support, you know, the ability to meet those goals.
Right.
That may mean sometime using your own heifers. It may be going out and buying something, because right. those goals may change along the way.
Yeah, it kind of along those lines. You said, you know, if your goal is one thing and your cow herd is another, you know, a lot of us, we either inherit a cow herd or we've got this cow herd and we want to go off in some direction. That cow herd may not be the right fit for whatever that goal is. So we need mm-hmm. to be careful on that. I use this example all the time. I've got a swine background from way back, you know, grew up with hogs. And when I first came to Kentucky, we did the on-farm testing program, and that was back, and I'm going to give you a little story, a little history here, but that was back in the 90s, and we couldn't get hogs lean enough. Now, we got them too lean, and we wrecked reproduction, but that's a whole other story. But the point I'm going to try to make here is we actually had the packing plants telling producers their hogs were too fat and were refusing to buy the hogs.
Wouldn't fit in their production facilities, no. The lines hanging,
yeah,
everything.
Yeah, I mean, it just wouldn't. They were too fat. It was too sloppy. I mean, they and so, I remember, excuse me, I remember one particular producer, and he had been rejected, his hogs had been rejected, and we turned his sow herd over in 2.5 years. And he went from having hogs rejected at the kill plant to hogs actually earning a premium. Now, why were we able to do that? We were able to do that because of the power of selection on the female side and the male side. We don't have that power in cattle. What I mean by that is, if a sow has 2 litters a year, let's just use round numbers, and she raises 10 pigs in each litter, all right? She's got 10 females, candidates, every year to replace herself. So we can select from 10 females to replace the dam of that particular female, you know, of those pigs. We got 10 to pick from. How many females do we have to pick from in a cow herd?
Maybe one.
A half?
Yeah, a half.
If you have 100% calf crop, you got a, and it's 50% of them are females, you got a, every year on the average, you got a half of a female, if that makes sense.
Sure.
Yeah, and you better pick the right half, right?
Yeah, so, that's right.
You
yeah.
know, so it there the power of selection, you I like to tell folks, you cannot select your way on a female side. You can't select your way out of a cow problem. If your cow herd has a problem, you don't have enough lifetimes
right.
to select your way just because of the generation interval of, you know, just the nature of cattle, you know, one calf a year. And so so you need to be honest about what your cow herd is. Does it fit your goals like you were talking about, Jay? And then, okay, if it doesn't, do we need to make a drastic change, like maybe buying in the kind of genetics that will? Okay, maybe our cow herd is pretty close to what our goals are and we just want to improve. Maybe that's when, and we want to raise our own replacements, because there's a lot of good reasons to do that. You know what you're raising. They're raised in your environment on your farm. Maybe that's when we go the extra mile to go find that good maternal line breeder that we can get mm-hmm. bull genetics from.
Or you could do some AI.
You could.
Work. That's be a good way to be able, if you're wanting to save your own heifers, that's a good way to be able to select from a lot of different maternal lines that may work with your cow herd.
And that's true. And you know, anymore, we've got more information than we know what to do with. You know, when you look at a bull stud catalog, but what's interesting now is you can probably find lines within breeds that would fit what you want. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm thinking of Simmental breeds and Angus. You know, everybody talks about Angus, but you know, there's a lot of different lines. And I mean, if we, you know, we don't have to go pick that spread bull that has the low birth weight and the huge yearling weight for our to raise our cows out of. Maybe we find that breeder or that bull in that AI stud that's more of that moderate frame, more of that moderate growth, something that's coming from a proven cow line with good udders and that kind of thing to use, through AI. And that's a good point, David, to go the AI route.
Kevin, I know that a lot of breed associations are keeping up with like 30-some-odd EPDs. What's a real simplistic approach to if you were wanting to save or if you were, say, you were wanting to select a bull or if you were wanting to do some AI work, what are 4 or 5 EPDs to key on to really look to see if that's what's going to work for you?
Well, I mean, this is kind of getting more into Dr. Bullock's area, but I know he's pretty high on. I think it's the Red Angus that has a stayability index. Different breeds have something similar to that, and that's kind of an EPD or an index that tries to, you know, put some credence on longevity in the herd and how that cow's, you know. Heifer pregnancy is one people look at, but I know he's pretty high on those stayability type EPDs for that. I think you do that, and then if you don't want your cows too big, you know, breeds have EPDs, either mature size EPDs or frame score EPDs. There's something there's some kind of size. EPD that you can maybe set some upper limits on and not make sure you don't go too high on those. You know, thing about EPDs, a lot of people like to criticize, oh, you just breed numbers, you know, the bigger the number, the better on growth, and the lower the number, the better on birth. And yeah, to a certain extent, we're all guilty of that because that a lot of times that's what sells in a bull sale, spread bulls. But you know, EPDs can be used to reduce things too. They're not always used just to make cattle bigger or milk more. They can be used to have them milk less, last longer, you know. And
a cow milks more, she's going to eat more,
exactly.
Consume more, you know, and on maybe, down the line.
And you get a drought year, and now all of a sudden she's an open cow.
Yeah.
You know.
Yep.
So I want to
revisit back, you know, when you're talking about goals and when you start thinking about retaining your own, growing your own. Talk about just a little bit how that changes the management from a side of space that you have. Because when you start retaining your own, I mean, that changes your management style, you know, your bulls, what bulls can be used. Is that something that you need to think about too? Because in one sense, it's almost like you're managing two different herds. than just managing one. If that's what you've been used to doing, is you have all your everything in one field. When one moves, they all move, and just, you know, having to manage that completely different, and then the space that it takes, and then the added management when you start, when you go down that lane.
No, Vicki, you're exactly right. And that's a whole nother aspect we haven't even touched on yet. You know, a lot of our cow herds are 20, 30 head. Economically, is it feasible to keep heifers in a 30 cow herd, 40 cow herd? You know, economically, probably not. And if we do, we're going to have a bull that has to do it all. That bull's got to give us good feeder calves, plus not be too big to where we can raise females that are not too big. So you're right. To do it right, you're really looking at larger producers to do it more economically and more efficiently, and you're probably going to have to run two different herds. You know, that's an excellent point. I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah, the management of those, and I actually had a conversation with one of my producers this week about that very thing, and he was talking about, you know, that he was wanting to keep these heifers and those type things, and he's going to keep them at one place and then keep the cows in another place, which is a good idea. And he was kind of conflicted about how he wanted to do that because he didn't know if he could get them managed, because he was asking me about feeding and doing some different things like that, and asked me actually what we did, you know, about feeding. And I told him I felt like I poured more money into the bred heifers, first calf heifers this time, than I probably ever have, and they were probably in better shape, and they all cycled. We actually AI'd all those last week, and they actually all cycled, you know, by the second day. Matter of fact, all of them except for two cycled on the first day. So
that's good.
It worked out really good, but it cost. And when you know what feed costs right now, it really costs to get that to happen. But open cows are not worth much.
So. But you were going back to Vicki's point, you had to run those as a group
separate,
by themselves.
Yeah,
so you
separate,
could
yeah.
take care of those.
That's correct. Yeah.
And just to get them bred, you AI'd.
Right.
What if somebody's not able to AI for whatever reason and you run in a one bull unit? Again, you got that jack of all trades kind of a bull trying to get it done for you to raise good feeder calves to sell. Plus, have good females. Mm-hmm. Plus, I mean, it gets complicated.
Putting a lot on one bull to get all that done,
right? Yeah, and you're if you really truly buy a good bull that can get all that done, you're going to pay for that bull.
Yep, right.
You know?
That's right.
So,
yeah.
And I think too, you know, going back to that management and what you want your herd to look like, I think that most of us work with producers that maybe aren't quite there yet. I mean, they like cattle, they like working with cattle, and but as far, they also have a job that's a day job. They're what, you know, what we would call their, you keep their day job so they can do their hobby farming. And so, you know, a lot of times I think these folks may not really know what they want their cattle herd to look like.
They
don't know what long term. They don't know what they want it to be.
That goes back to the goal thing that
y'all
were talking about. I mean, you got to sit down and decide what you're wanting to, you know, what do you want to produce? Do you want to produce, you know, feeder calves, or do you want to, you know, produce heifers that people can buy? You know, open heifers for breeding purposes. You know, you really got
to
sit down.
And what time you have to put into wherever you want to go, because
facilities
depending on which direction you're going,
yep.
some of those are going to require more time of you and need more help to help you get that done.
Along that conversation of setting goals, there's nothing, as long as we keep in mind that all the animals we produce are going to end up in the food chain eventually, and we want to raise them humanely and make sure that, you know, we get all of them out of them we can, making that goal or setting that goal for enjoyment might be, you know, there's nothing really wrong with that, because we do have, we work with a lot of small producers that may not have that top management mindset when it comes to the efficiency of their herd. I remember one of the talks we had at the beef efficiency conference back in the winter about minimum wage cows. And I think about that, and I think about some of the producers that we deal with and how they go about selecting the things that they select. And most of them are not remembering the fact that they're doing this to enjoy it. They're you know, I wish more people would take advantage of the AI situation like you were talking about, David. We work with a lot of producers that have 15 cows or less, no reason to own a bull. as long as you can work with somebody who can help you get that done. You may not be able to do it yourself, but keeping those ideas in mind when you're setting those goals and understanding that enjoyment of what you do can be your goal. There's nothing certain or wrong with that at all.
It's funny you say that, because one thing Les Anderson, our reproductive specialist, likes to talk about, one of his pie in the sky, you know, the ultimate goal kind of, you know, project he would love to do is to have a no bull system that's practical enough for anybody to jump on board, you know, and that's a lot easier said than done. But, you know, bulls are a pain.
They are. I remember a producer in Christian County that I worked with, and you know, won't call no names. He was a great guy, but he'd called me one day and said, "Hey, I'm going to send some numbers for you to look at." He said, "I'm looking at a bull in a sale." Sale was out in Montana somewhere, you know, and he sent me what he was looking at, and I called him back, you know. I said, "I got your stuff. You emailed me." I said, "But let's think about this." I said, "You've got three cows. Do you really want to increase the amount of trouble that you have at home by buying a bull?"
Right.
And long story short, he's been AI now for a few years, completely AI. He pays a technician to come in from up around Owensboro somewhere to do all of his work, you know. And I think he's a lot happier for it in the long run.
If he had to keep up some bulls, I guarantee you he's a lot happier.
Well, and here's the thing. This guy had a full-time job. They were his pets. He kept in mind that, and most of what he did, he hardly ever even sold a calf unless it was to a neighbor or something like that. He put up beef for him and his family, but he just enjoyed coming home and fooling with his cows every evening, you know.
And I tell you, there's nothing – I mean, that's why a lot of us – why we have cattle. We're not getting rich doing this, you know. We like the lifestyle. We enjoy it. And the older I get, the more I realize that it's not all just economics. You know, it's a
quality of life.
And if you keep that in mind when you're setting that goal, it makes it a lot easier to make certain management decisions.
Yep.
Well, Kevin, tell us a little bit about, you know, when we are selecting, we'll get back to, we kind of got off track there a little bit. we'll get back on. Talk to us a little bit about how important feet and legs are.
Feet and legs are important, but can I back up and jump on another criteria?
Sure, absolutely.
Let's say you made that commitment. You're going to raise your own heifers. All right. We've talked at length and gotten the weeds, I guess, a little bit with all our other stuff, but which is important. But we have made that decision. We're going to keep our own heifers. So what we need to do, and research backs this up, we really need to try and keep females that are born to cows early in the calving season. And there's lots of research that backs that up. If a heifer is born early in the calving season, she will tend to calve early in the calving season when she becomes bred, and she will tend to remain early in the calving season. So even though fertility technically is kind of a lowly heritable trait, something that we can really boost with crossbreeding, which we hadn't even got into crossbreeding yet. We can touch on that here in a minute. But that's a trend that we need to be aware of that's been backed by research. You know, something born early in the calving season, when they go into production, they'll tend to calve early and they'll tend to remain early in their calving season. So that's huge. So that's to me, that's number one criteria once you've already produced these heifers. That would be it. The other thing is, you know, obviously looking at conformation and whatnot. And I don't think it has to be a show confirmation kind of deal. But now feet and legs, which you brought up originally in your question there, feet and legs is so, so important. And at that yearling stage is what we try to get, at least our consigners, and I kind of encourage folks in general, to look at feet and legs, especially the hoof shape. They call it the claw, the how the toes come together. If you want to see a good reference on that, the American Angus Association, which, by the way, the Angus Association had a good fair bit of trouble with feet and legs, mainly feet, and have stepped up over the last few years and come up with some EPDs for claw and hoof set, and the depth of heel. You don't want them shallow heeled and down on their pasterns, if you will, or weak pasterns. But you want that claw to not be pointed together, not hooked together like we talk about screw claw. Screw claw, is kind of a slang term for it. But if you want some references on that, you can probably just Google it, like a lot of things, and see what foot scoring looks like. But look at that at the yearling stage. A lot of times, if they're already turning and there's some scores, they score it from, I think, 1 to 9, I think. But, you know, a 5 is ideal. So you've got the right amount of set in that claw and then on the and then set in the pastern there on the depth of heel. So, but look at get familiar with that, because if you've got one that's already shallow heeled and starting to turn on the claw set on the toes, you know, what's going to happen is you're going to put a lot of money in that heifer, get her bred, she does fine, and then about year 4 or 5 is when she's going to fall out. Yeah. And that's when she's returning to her investment.
And a lot of times you can't tell, and they don't show up until they get to be a yearling.
Exactly.
We actually had one last year that we had taken all the way through. You know, we had fed that fall and everything, and actually took her to one of my friend's house. He's actually the one that does all the breeding. And he called me and sent me a picture, and he said, "Hey, I just saw this, and she was about 13 months old when we actually saw it." So those things can show up about when they're yearlings, and I mean, of course, we got rid of her. I mean, right. That's the way to do it. I mean, yeah. You just got to get shed of them.
And that's you know, not to pick on the Angus breed, but I think we had one of those speakers come into one of the efficiency conferences. One of those conferences we had, I think he said he narrowed it down, a lot of the problems in Angus breed, to primarily 5 or 6 popular AI sires. Of course, he wouldn't name which ones they were that time. That was several years ago. But one thing that was I thought was kind of neat about the deal, yeah, the Angus breed did have a trouble, and all breeds can have it, but they had a problem, but they addressed the problem with foot score EPDs. And whether the EPDs are actually working on the foot score or not, I think just the awareness of it is what's helped eliminate a lot of the problem. I think breeders are looking at it more because they have to now. And so I know just personally screening heifers for, say, our select bred heifer sales, several years ago, I would screen out probably cull, I don't know, 8 or 10 out of 200 that I look at. And that's after the breeders on the farm screened them themselves. Mm-hmm. I would come along and screen another 8 to 10 before we even got to the sale. And I'd say in the last couple sales, I probably only had to cull 2 or 3. Now, I don't know how much, again, the consigners are doing on their own, because they all know to look for it. I think the problem's getting better, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
I think we're better educated about it.
We're better educated. And, you know, again, kudos to Angus Association for doing that. Kind of like what limousines did years ago. Limousines were the pioneer in docility EPD. You know, limousines had a disposition problem back then, you know, and they addressed it. And now, after limousines addressed their disposition issue, a lot of other breeds followed suit. Because, yeah, you get the competitive nature of breeds, associations. Yeah. So that kind of thing, you know, that's kind of interesting just to kind of see how things evolve, you know.
Well, I think that brings up a good point just when you're starting and when you're selecting, for your heifers or bulls for that matter, there's not one thing that you need to look at. There's a whole list and line of things that you need to look at and really put the time in before you spend the money on that and make sure that you are getting what you think you're getting and what you need.
Right. And you know, feet, I did a little, we did a field day a couple of weeks ago, and we were at a purebred breeder's place, and this person does show. And we were looking at feet on heifers. And the guy commented, he says, you know, from a show standpoint, we'll trim that foot. He said, but that foot was still there genetically. And I said, and I appreciate, here's a guy who raises show cattle, pointed that out, not to be smart aleck. He was actually trying to to point that out, that, hey, be careful who you talking to, you know. Are they just trimming these bulls' feet before the sale, you know, to make them look the part? And, again, get to know the breeder that you're buying your bull from.
And you get a lot of that, too, Kevin, with a lot of the, you know, and we've all been to bull sales in different places. But, you know, if you've got one that they're feeding 250 or 300 bulls, and they're feeding them silage, and they're feeding them all they can eat and all this – a lot of times they do trim feet before,
yeah,
you know, before the sale. So that's right. Something you need to be aware of.
Yep, yep. So, I mean, those are just the kind of questions to ask. Yep. But, Vicki, back to what you said, we were talking about disposition. Disposition is, and what Jay said, we got to enjoy what we're doing. The older I get, the less I enjoy crazy cattle. Don't know.
That would be one of the first things I look at if it were me personally.
Don't know if I was ever much of a cowboy anyway to begin with. I can tell you that I wasn't. But
the one guarantee you have with a crazy cow is she'll raise a calf just like her.
A lot of times.
I had that conversation with my son this weekend. Actually, we were not talking about cattle.
It's one of those life lessons. Huh? I got you. So that's something we really try hard to screen for in the heifer sale, and you, if you're raising your own heifers, obviously. And I'm going to tell you, it is part environmental, though. Fence line feeders. I love cube feeders. I don't have one yet. I still have a son at home at 15 that can pick up buckets, and he wants to be strong, you know. So he's my cube feeder. But when he leaves, yeah, that's the big joke around our family. When Daniel finally goes off to college, I might buy me one of those cube feeders, you know. But anyway, but fence line feeders, whether it's a cube feeder or a TMR wagon or whatever, probably don't do a whole lot for disposition, you know, because we're not in there walking in amongst them. And some of our big operations, you know, who have moved to that kind of more automated feeding have seen disposition slip. And I think that's something to be, there's some conditioning, especially that, I know Dr. Burris used to always say that first winter, you say you got a springborn calf, you wean them in the fall, that first winter, you can make a lot of progress disposition if you walk through those cattle, those heifers, that group of heifers, you know, get on foot with them and pour that bucket of feed out amongst them. At least 2 or 3 times a week, bring them a treat or something. Yep. You know,
I worked with a producer in my county. Matter of fact, they're in the Beef IRM program, the long term programs, and I wish I had like those videos before and then 2 and 3 years later, because it was what you're saying, that first time we went out there to work the cattle, you know, it didn't go anything like anybody thought it would and hoped that it would. But just these little changes that we made, like you said, feeding them every day, you know, the next time we were out there was a completely different situation and everybody was calmer.
I think,
you
know, who you're talking about.
You do.
And they had a self-feeder.
Yes.
And self-feeders are just like a fence line feeder. Self-feeders, you still need to bring them a treat.
Yep.
Somehow,
yes.
Whether that's a nice, you know, fluffy or bale of orchard grass hay or something.
Yeah, it's just a completely
whatever.
Different. The cat, you know, from the first time we went to even just that fall, I mean, same cattle we're dealing with, but you could see such a big difference in them being able to get the cattle where we need them, to, you know, sorting them so they could, you know, work them. Just everything worked so much smoother just making a little change, you know, change like that.
Kevin had, we had put in some fence line feeders this time when we built this barn, and you had cautioned me. You said, hey, now you need to, you know, and so we actually put some feeders on the other side where we actually have to go in and pour out feed on the back side of where the fence line feeders are. And I do think that makes a big difference. I mean, right. It's just, there's no comparison, because that's what we were feeding. It's just, you know, you just go out there and pour out the feed and the calves would be out there. But this fence line it's a safety issue for as I get older and that kind of thing, but it still doesn't lessen the fact that you need to get in there and walk in there and amongst them. And I try to do that even now, just out there when they're eating hay and stuff,
just
out there and walk with them.
It's right, better, you know, for your cattle, but it makes you a better herdsman as well.
Yeah,
absolutely.
You pick up on stuff that
you're going to see more things that you'll miss from a cab of a tractor by being out and being in with them every day.
That's a good point, and I may be getting off on a tangent, but see, we background a load of calves every year, and the way we feed mineral is we don't feed much feed, but we put our mineral in the troughs, especially in the summertime. It's every other day when we go to every other day feeding in the grazing season. And I like to say it keeps me honest. It keeps the cattle honest. You know, I'm not relying on a silly, you know, 6-7 weight calf to find that mineral feeder on a continuous basis. I'm giving him that mineral allotment in the bottom of that trough, and then I pour a little bit of feed over the top. But it makes me, I know I've got to go out there at least every other day. They've got to see me. You know, I see them, they see me, I can check things, you know, when you know, we get busy in the summer, we can maybe skip 2 or 3 days if we want. Well, this, it keeps us all honest, and they'll follow my little UTV or old white truck, whatever. They'll follow it wherever I needed to go, you know. I mean, it's
less stressful.
Yeah. It's different for different producers. You're talking about it being a safety factor, especially for some of our producers that have been around a while. They know those things, and they're going to find other ways to look for some of those things. But for our new producers or younger guys coming up, that I don't think we can stress how valuable it is to get out and spend time in your herd for whatever reason, whatever excuse you can find to be out in them. You'll find more things and see more things because of it.
And if you end up having one that's their temperament's not very good, get rid of it. Move it on because it'll keep you from getting hurt, hopefully.
Yeah, and this is a good time to segue into the West Kentucky Select Bred Heifer Sale. Kevin, this is something you stress to those consigners, and you actually go out there and go through the cattle just like the consigner does and kind of get rid of those that you try to. It's hard to do that.
Yeah, I like to say the acid test is when they come to town and we're at the – at the yard, and they're in their sale pen, and then we've got, you know, people walking up and down the aisle or maybe even going in the pen, which I encourage to go into the pen with them and test the disposition of them. But, that's sort of the final acid test, if you will. But, yeah, we try our best to screen at the farm. Again, we got a good set of consigners that try to do their best the same way. A lot of times, you know, big joke with me and some of the consigners, we'll be out there and I'll say, well, what about that one? And, you know, number 32, she's a little standoffish. And you know, every now and then, you know, it's just gut reaction. You know, you own your own cattle and you'll try to make excuses for them. And every now and then one of them will say, well, oh, that's just because we're here. You're here. You know, I said, well, it's going to be me and about 50 other people there in a few weeks. So if she don't like me right now being with you, she may not like, you know. But I don't have much resistance from our consigners. They've been good about trying to, because they see it. I mean, if we get heifers that come into the ring, and I like to call it stirring the pot, you know, and they can't settle down, they're turning and circling the whole time in the ring. Yeah, you can just knock $300 or $400 off of them.
Yep.
Hey, nobody wants to buy that, and I don't encourage them. I don't want them. You know,
yep.
I mean, we don't want that, and we try to eliminate that from passing on to our customers. Yep. So,
what are some of the other requirements?
Well, we try to apply all the science that we know. We get the reproductive criteria from try to use all our subject matter specialists. So, Les Anderson, you know, the latest and greatest on what he's telling us to do for developing heifers in terms of pelvic area and that kind of thing, or from a health standpoint. So they got to meet a minimum pelvic area. We've got to we're breeding them the calving ease bulls with calving ease EPDs is our primary criteria, not birth weight, but calving ease EPDs. We've got a minimum there, and then we have. We've got, from a health standpoint, they have to be PI tested and have all of their health work. But in addition is the PI testing. Mm-hmm. We do also have a mineral requirement because our nutritionist would back this up. It doesn't matter how good your health program is and your vaccines are. If you don't have good mineral nutrition, the immune response is not going to – they won't you know, the vaccine won't do its job. So we have a mineral requirement. You can get online at kyheifersale.com and see some of these specifics. And we also booster and treat for parasites within 90 days of the sale. Booster for lepto, I should say. And again,
and you try to cull out all the rat tails and bad eyes and all quality, the best you can.
Right. Now, we'll have a range in sizes. We should have something for everybody size wise. A lot of people still like the big old strapping heifers that's got a little flesh on them, and I mean that's what, you know, a lot of people come
they look
and
nice sell,
and they do. But we've got some folks who are bringing heifers that are more moderate frame now and are doing fine with it. One thing we haven't touched on, I guess, we alluded to it earlier, and we didn't go anywhere with it, was crossbreeding. You know, and Dr. Bullock would be, he'd be pleased to know. I mean, he is he beats the crossbreeding drum at all times. And crossbreeding is the best thing we can do for a crossbred cow is the best thing we can have in terms of a cow that's going to stay in production, live through the droughts, breed back during the drought years, last a few years longer.
And you kind of get the best of all worlds right there when you do the crossbreeding thing.
Yeah, and we try to highlight that for our heifer sale when we've got a Gelvie Angus cross or a Simmental Angus cross or a Brangus cross. We try to make sure and describe those cattle the best we can in that catalog. So now ones that are predominantly Angus that I don't know for sure are pure Angus, we call them Angus cross. But if I list two breeds, and this will just give you a little tip when you're looking at the web page and the catalog, if I actually list two breeds, then we know for sure it's got those two breeds in it. And so that's a good way to go, good thing to go by when you're looking at the catalog.
Yeah.
So.
You know, Kevin, almost every time we do this show, I hear one of our guests or David or Vicky one say something that gives me an idea for that next show, and I think we could talk for 45 minutes about hybrid vigor at point, you know, and AI as far as that matter.
Right,
you've helped us populate probably the next two or three shows.
Right, yeah. Well, you know, I like to say it. I know we might be running short on time, but, you know, this isn't purebred corn everybody's trying to plant right now.
That's exactly right. They're all hybrids.
It's hybrid corn, and we need to be mindful of that. So
Kevin, coming up May the 21st, I believe the sale's at noon.
At noon, yep.
Tell us that day, what happens that day? How's
it? Well, it starts the day before. They'll bring them to town on Friday, and we'll put them through the chute one more time. I'll look at feet one more time, feet, eyes, that kind of thing. The vet's going to do a yes or no on the pregnancy. You know, we'll usually catch two or three, you know, that maybe didn't that have slipped or whatever. But we'll have them one last check. That next morning, we will actually, the stockyard will actually sort those into their sale pen. For a sale at noon, we should have them in their sale pens by 9. And I encourage folks to come out as close to 9 o'clock. Usually it's a late arriving crowd. So if you want the barn to yourself, get there at 9. You know, David, you've helped me for years. Get there at 9, you'll have the barn to yourself.
Yeah, there's nobody there.
Yeah, and nobody. you can at will go through and look at the heifers and have the catalogs on site, and then we'll start the sale at noon. And what I like is our auctioneer is very farmer friendly. This is not a purebred, you know, we don't have bid takers working the crowd and none of that kind of stuff. It's not a high pressure sale. Very farmer friendly sale. It's a commercial heifer sale for commercial cattlemen. So
goes really good, and I guess we can ease into our timely tip now.
I was going to ask you too. Yeah. We've talked about all three of these things through the whole show, but won't you roll on into that for us?
Our timely tip for this week is to always do your homework before attending heifer or bull sales and use EPDs, live animal evaluation, and temperament evaluation as tools to select your replacements for your cow herd. I don't think we could have said it much better there, Kevin. Do you? Those are some pretty good. I encourage people to do their homework, you know, before, you know, set your goals beforehand and look at the catalog and say, well, this bull will fit or these heifers will fit my program or these will not, you know, and y'all always do a good job of having all that stuff up on the internet. Google West Kentucky Select Bred Heifer Sale come up every time.
Yeah, and it's not. There's no pictures yet. I'm in the process of screening. I still got three more farms to screen.
But by the time
by the end of next week, at the latest, we're going to have something to see, videos and pictures of what's going to be there.
So you'll know what fits your operation, what doesn't. You know, if you've got a certain breed that you want to stay away from or it doesn't work with your particular cow herd or the bull that you already have, then you can look it through there and get all that information.
And give me a call. I don't mind a bit. Or grab me there at sale day, and I'll you know, tell me what you're wanting, and I'll try to bring you direct, you know, kind of steer you in that direction. So
all that contact information is on the the website there, and that's a very informative website, one of the best ones I think that there is around as far as a bred heifer sale goes. So look forward to seeing everybody. Let's see, May the 21st at 12 noon at Kentucky Tennessee Livestock Market.
Yep, Guthrie,
yep.
Kentucky.
You know, David, with that being said, I think we probably need to do a show on setting goals at some point,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, that's right.
And that's because it's so important for all of our producers, yep, regardless of what commodity you're growing or raising. I think it's important.
We probably talked about it all spring, actually.
Absolutely.
And that's not something that farmers in general are comfortable talking about, yep, because they feel like they're not doing anything if they're not actually out there working the cattle or, you know, or planting corn or whatever it is. That doesn't seem like work always. And yeah, so
I think we have a specialist that could do that some justice.
We had a dairy specialist years ago that actually performed some of this in some of our different beef trainings that we does, but he talked about the abbreviation for management, MGT, and that was management goals and tactics, you know.
Right.
So have your management plan, set your goals for what it takes to meet that plan, and then develop the tactics to reach those goals. And
yep.
That's
right. Probably a good place to end right there. So we want to thank this week's guest, Kevin LaRond, again, our beef specialist here at Princeton, and our host for the information, and thanks to all of our listeners for joining in. We hope you've enjoyed the show and make plans to join us again next week for our next episode. And until then, remember, Kentucky Ag matters.